and welcome to this episode of Invest Africa Insights, where we'll be discussing how Africa fared at COP26 and why environmental, social and governance issues matter to African businesses. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Rufaro Mucheka, Business Development Consultant for Africa at Jersey Finance. Rufaro, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
So the end of last year, we obviously had COP26, and one of the main outcomes of those discussions was actually for countries to come back together in a year's time to push for more ambitious targets in an acknowledgement that this is an area where you need to maintain the momentum over time. And so it's interesting now, a couple of months out from COP26, to look back at those discussions and what Africa got out of them and where they are going next.
And for Africa, all this is happening against a very challenging backdrop of the COVID-19 pandemic, which is seriously hampering the region's push towards economic development and its ability to meet not just environmental goals, but other development goals as well. So just to kick us off, if you sort of cast your mind back, it seems like a long time ago now, but only a couple of weeks ago to the end of COP26, what were your key takeaways there coming out of the discussions?
Yeah, especially for some of us who were not, you know, we're not on COP at COP26, but you could follow a lot of the news on newspapers, media and TV. One could actually conclude and say there were many deliberations on pertinent issues to save our planet. It is assuring to note that there were some agreements in principle on what needs to be done, but in some cases, they fell short of commitments, especially on when these commitments would be effected. Three takeaways from my side. The first one is an agreement was reached on the Glasgow Climate Pact, which embeds acceptance of the science, reinforces and elevates commitment to 1.5 degrees centigrade target, explicitly referencing the end of fossil fuel use and the need to reduce carbon emissions by 45% by year 2030. However, this was watered down with regard to coal being phased down rather than phased out. And the second one, in line with the objectives of COP26, Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero was announced and made private finance commitments to the tune of $130 trillion being mobilized. This alliance of financial institutions committed to meeting the outcomes from the Paris Climate Agreement and will work together towards meeting global net zero by 2050. And the last one from my side is the International Sustainability Standards Board was also launched to establish a comprehensive baseline for sustainability reporting and disclosure standards, as this is currently lacking.
No, and I'm sure we'll come back to a lot of those points in more detail, but perhaps just to focus in on Africa a little bit. And you mentioned there the financial institutions and the way that they sort of tried to come together around COP26 to mobilize capital for sustainable finance. And, you know, it's a really key piece of the puzzle, and it's a really key piece of the puzzle for Africa. So what do you see from your position as being the sort of bottlenecks that have stopped sustainable investment reaching the African market?
Yeah, and we know that Africa has got 54 countries and is the continent with the largest number of countries, which also shows to fragmentation, different official languages, different cultural languages. But if one were just to look at, you know, the main bottlenecks on the continent, especially from a sustainable investment perspective. The first one for me is difficulty sourcing viable investments that meet both financial and social environmental objectives as a result of limited capacity of sustainable social enterprises. And what I mean by this is there is low deal flow on the continent, is partly due to the limited number of sustainable social enterprises or impact investees able to demonstrate sufficient track record and capacity development in accordance with the risk appetite of impact investors. This is coupled with limited ability to measure and report adequately on impact performance where such capacities do exist. The second one from my side is unclear regulatory environment. Like I said earlier, we are talking of 54 countries. And you can imagine how it impacts both investors and sustainable social enterprises. Currently, African enterprises are generally challenged by poor environment of doing business and investors constrained by underdeveloped financial markets. The third one, it's poor and inconsistent impact measurement practices. And then I'm very excited about the International Sustainability Standards Board, which will actually help in the measurement perspective. So measuring, understanding, and improving the impact created by an investment are central to the definition of impact investment. Currently, there is lack of consistency in standardized reporting frameworks and metrics that sufficiently cater for the impact reporting. And so on my side, I'm very optimistic about the setup of the of this body that will create those standards. The fourth one, there's critical funding gap, and it's normally spoken about, especially on the continent, for enterprises in their early stages of growth. Investors display low appetite for risk in the impact investment sector, with reluctance to invest in early stage enterprises. It's also because it depends on whether organizations, you know, operate on the continent or not to really understand the risk of whatever those projects are, especially given the landscape that I outlined earlier. And the fifth one from my side, it's inadequate network of services that connect and inform sustainable social enterprises, investors, and other industry players. The sector ecosystem is generally fragmented and underdeveloped, with few options of established central spaces for connecting investors and investees. And the one thing that I know that on the continent we are trying to do is, you know, like conferences. Like last week, I was at a conference in Cape Town, which was a conference really targeting the entrepreneurs, and there were also some investees that were part of it. But exactly the biggest challenge is to an investor, if one doesn't understand the risk, it becomes very difficult for any investor to commit. And so from a JSE Finance perspective, Africa needs capital invested into the continent in a structured, transparent way. And JSE is a jurisdiction that can do this. As a leading jurisdiction for private equity funds, impact investment funds, and more, JSE can provide vital support that is needed to invest this capital across the African continent. So yeah, so from my side, there are a myriad of bottlenecks, but these for me are the main ones.
There's definitely lots to unpack there. You've spoken a lot about the sort of regulatory issues and also really the measurement issues, which comes into what you're saying about transparency, doesn't it, as well? And how you have a system and people can understand each other when they're measuring impacts as well. And lastly, that sort of risk perception issue on the continent. So I know we'll definitely talk a bit more about the standards in a minute, but just sort of as a general question then, you know, if we're thinking about those issues that you were talking about, we're talking in lots of ways about taking a fragmented market and a misunderstood market and trying to make it more unified and more understood. Do you think COP26 made progress on that broad goal of sort of presenting the African sustainable investment opportunity effectively?
I think, you know, it's like when you look at the issues that need to be solved, especially from a climate perspective, they are quite huge. But unfortunately, not everything is going to be fixed today. So, but to some extent, yes, COP26 has shown us that there is sufficient funding for sustainable investments, for the net zero transition, but we still need policymakers to drive the decarbonization agenda, create investable projects, and set the right rules and incentives. There was reaffirmation of the US $100 billion $100 billion per year in climate finance for developing countries. And if you look at a country like South Africa, for example, it's already committed to utilizing these funds to decarbonize its power sources, which is currently reliant on coal. On another note, the launch of the International Sustainability Standards Board that I mentioned earlier will definitely assist in delivery of high quality, transparent, reliable, and comparable reporting on climate and other ESG matters, which will create consistency. This standard approach to measure performance against clear impact criteria, targets, and deliverables will help market participants, more so investors, in understanding the impact created by a particular investment. It is expected to impact reporting at levels similar to financial disclosures. This will support better decision-making, especially from investors, and enable stronger policy-making, while it is also likely to fuel stronger enforcement and more litigation. In addition, we also have to recognize that Africa is starting from a lower base in terms of the move towards the low-carbon economy. Africa is not yet industrialized, meaning that the changes that are needed may actually see more disruptions in the societies. We have to take an approach that is pro-development, pro-poor, and which ultimately allows the maximum number of people to be able to exit poverty and have a good quality of life. And remember, it's up to each country to implement the outcomes. From an international perspective, JESSI can act as a key partner for Africa to help support and deliver sustainable growth by the provision of access to capital markets, investor protection, and expertise and governance experience in areas such as anti-corruption and tax transparency.
And I'd love to talk a little bit more about the point you were making there about the International Sustainability Standards Board, because I think it's a really important one. And we at Invest Africa, and you've been part of some of these discussions as well over the last few years, have spent a lot of time talking about environmental and social governance standards and how they work for African businesses, and whether or not we needed or how to get to a point where you had a more unified way of thinking about those metrics, as you were saying, like we do for financial reporting, and it's an easily understandable standard. So do you think that this, that the ISSB could be that, that sort of progress, could be that unified, centralized standards?
Yeah, and I must say, from an Invest Africa perspective, you are playing a very big role, because I also participated in the Africa debate in September, where a lot of the discussions were really talking about ESG and the continent as well. So yes, so from an from this International Sustainability Standards Board, I strongly feel that the reporting has been voluntary, and now with investors moving disclosures from a nice to have, which is what has been, to must have, because a lot of investors are really looking at impact investing very differently. There is need for convergence and creation of a single ESG framework that will bring consistency and comparability to impact reporting. As a result, the current impact investing landscape is broad and fragmented. Most of the organizations that work in this field have developed their own approaches to identifying and selecting impact investing frameworks and creating impact investing portfolios, which means there isn't a standard. As global challenges such as environmental, social, and governmental issues demand financial institutions to pivot their finance towards standardization, greener and more sustainable companies and investment. Sustainability reporting needs to be harmonized and interconnected with financial reporting for an effective response to the global challenges of our time and to address stakeholder demands. There is need for market-ready investments and projects with clearly defined objectives and measurable climate outcomes, which with this as a body that would really help in creating that. The International Sustainability Standards Board will definitely assist in the delivery of high quality, transparent, reliable, and comparable reporting by companies on climate and other environmental, social, and governance matters. In the process, it will elevate impact reporting and disclosures to those of financial and strengthening better decision-making and enabling stronger policy-making. In Jersey, we are working with industry, policymakers, and development agencies to understand how we can encourage partnerships that leverage both capital and expertise, both in terms of financial structuring, governance, but also in terms of measuring reporting on sustainable outcomes, as well as using our existing relationships with Africa to drive innovative projects.
And perhaps, if it would be helpful at this point to take a little step back, because I know, you know, sometimes for businesses, they're hearing, we talk about ESG, we talk about the ISSB, we talk about the Principles for Responsible Investing, hundreds and hundreds of acronyms. So if you were sort of taking a step back and someone was saying to you, as an African business was saying to you, you know, why should I care about ESG standards? Why is it important to my business for me to engage with this?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the pandemic has given us so many lessons, whether it's in developing countries or developed countries. There were so many lessons from the pandemic. So whilst looking at the post-pandemic back-to-business strategy, there is an expectation for regulators, oversight authorities, and policymakers to become more vocal about the need and greater adoption of ESG measures. As the COVID crisis unfolded, we know that many businesses and investors shifted their focus from profits to people. Human impact became a very huge priority. Issues related to human equality, access to health services, and societal welfare topped the agendas. It quickly became clear that the environment and social issues have a deep and a direct influence on economic stability. If you look at even now with the emergence of the new variant, we have seen why some borders have closed to be able to protect people, because it has really shifted from just a business, but making sure that people are protected. So climate change, land, water, sustainability are not mere corporate social responsibility issues, but are building blocks towards the survival of many communities in Africa. Jersey has some successes through organizations such as like Brighter Life, which is a Kenyan company which domiciled in Jersey that managed to raise $65 million, enabling more than 1 million people living off-grid in Kenya. So it shows that it can be done. So one can still focus on profits, but also on the other hand, really focusing on ESG. So climate change is an economic reality, not a threat. It is real and needs to be considered by all investors. In the meantime, jurisdictions like Jersey are moving ahead with introduction of pragmatic regulatory measures to help prevent the risk of greenwashing without stifling scaling up and the scaling up of sustainable finance. So like I've said earlier, definitely economic development can work very much hand in hand with ESG, because COVID has really shown us the importance of looking after people.
And Arifah, I always like to sort of start to wrap up by looking to the future a bit, and you know, a topic like this, climate change and COP26 can be a bit sort of overwhelming for people, I think, sometimes. So I always like to try and end on a sort of positive future thinking note. So from your perspective, if you're looking at the future, it could be sort of the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, what trends or, you know, sectors, markets, or even a specific project in Africa makes you feel excited and do you think will be really sort of attractive, make the continent really attractive to impact investors going forwards?
Yeah, thanks so much for that question. The profile of Africa's impact investors primarily includes fund managers, asset managers, development finance institutions, donors, private equity, and at times, you know, someone saves their money. And we've also seen on the continent where someone, you know, they even take their retirement money to go and start a small business because they can see the difference that they are going to make. So though the economic forecast is optimistic that African economies will rebound in 2022, the growth forecasts are highly dependent on the containment of the virus, vaccine distribution, continued progress in structural transformation, leveraging initiatives such as the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement. And what we have also seen, especially with the pandemic, is people have really started to focus on, you know, regional trade. And also they've realized that especially even within their own countries, they can also become self-sustainable. We have seen a lot of places where, you know, even schools have started doing some farming so that they can be self-sustainable in terms of food, and the excess food they would then, you know, sell. So a lot of there's been a lot of introspection where creativity has really come in, and people have realized that there's a lot of collaboration that they can do with even their neighbors as well. So the pandemic has highlighted the importance and likely greater focus on certain key sectors such as healthcare and pharmaceuticals, agriculture, education, electricity, technology, given that people are working from home. So the priority for Africa's industrialization is access to electricity. The good news is that renewable energy is the cheapest form of energy generation available. And therefore, it makes sense for Africa to invest in renewables. Nevertheless, we must recognize that in certain circumstances, improving base generation capacity may require additional investments in fossil fuels to allow increased renewables to or be brought online. Other sectors that have been illuminated by COVID are green energy, clean technology. Like I said earlier, you've got your healthcare and pharmaceuticals. As we enter a decade of action for the Sustainable Development Goals, we know that private capital has a vital role to play in filling this gap, particularly as COVID places further strain on public funding sources. That is where forward-thinking jurisdictions like Jersey have a key role to play in terms of providing access to both capital and sustainable investment opportunities, bringing together the expertise and structures to help deploy investment into developing markets. All I can say to you is Africa is open for business. And I think this is really the age of creativity and innovation. We've seen a lot of projects that people have started during the pandemic, where some people have even left some of their jobs to start some of these new developments, new ideas have cropped up. So yeah, Africa is open for investment.
Right, fantastic. Thank you so much. And a great note to end on.
Thank you a lot.
And if anyone wants to learn more about Faro and her work at Jersey Finance, you can also find some links in the description to take you to some more information. So Faro, thanks once again. And thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you. Bye.